Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presented I Survived Real Estate 2012. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and the outlook for real estate in the coming year. Over $77,000 was raised to benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. Foreclosure Radar, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, the Investors Workshops, Invest Club for Women, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Fry Wilds, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
When you start mimicking a year in the past, you also can match it with debt that was owed on the property values at the time. And that's significant. So let's take a look at a chart of debt. And if you start looking at 2000 on the bottom and you go straight up, you'll see that our real estate, when it was only worth, say, $245, we owed $11 trillion on it. And at the time in 2000, what did we owe? Five? That's a bit of a problem. You have a lot of debt you don't know what to do with, but can you forgive it all? No, I don't think the system would have done too well. But now that we have a 340 price, my screen just went out. But anyway. Oh, there it is. Good. I hope I didn't touch anything bad. Now that we're at 340, we're starting to mimic year 2003. And if you take a look at 2003, all of a sudden we now can deal with maybe $7 trillion of debt. It's got equity coverage. If you notice the articles once in a while coming from CoreLogic, it says prices went up so many thousands of dollars, and what it did is it took so many thousands of people out from out of under negative equity. That's starting to occur. And this is the progression that we've had. If you have a price progression enough, you get this debt to feel less bad. And that's what's starting to happen. This is the amount of borrowers that are underwater, and some of them, you know, like 3.6% of them are only 4% underwater. So you have a 4% price increase from, say, 340. How much is that? 13 grand? Then a chunk of those people are not in negative equity. That's going to start, I believe, to occur, and that's why I think Mr. Schiller is incorrect. And I think it's going to start having a pretty profound effect. So how do you solve this debt problem from the bottom up? How do you get prices to escalate if that's the intent? Well, it'd be really nice if you'd make the monthly payment really cheap. Have we accomplished that? Yes. Sean O'Toole and I, being the nerds that we are, we went to Washington, D.C., and what did we do? We read data. We went to the Library of Congress and had a good old time looking at old microfiche, and while he was working on the 1800s, I was looking at the 1900s. And I've seen articles that say, not in the last 50 years have we had interest rates this low. And then you find out, you know what, the data source only had 50 years of interest rates. So you go, well, wait a minute, maybe we ought to figure out if we've ever had interest rates this low in this century, since 1900. You know what the answer is? No. That's pretty cool to know. This is an all-time record. And I want you to think about what that means. In San Bernardino right now, in the Inland Empire generally, rent costs $6,800 more a year than your payment to own. That's never happened before. What if prices went up $50,000 and your interest rate was 3.25%? Translate that in interest. Is interest the biggest portion of your payment? Okay. 3.25% of 50 grand divided by 12. Your payment go up very much? No. You see, we've never been able to say that. What I think we're about to have is an escalation of price because there's room and it makes sense. Because here's the question. Instead of being afraid of, well, we've never had a 50 grand price increase or a 100 grand price increase, ask this question. Would you willingly go from renter to owner, all things being equal, on a monthly basis? Most people would say yes to that. And so, guess what? I think that's about to happen. Other investments are volatile. Anybody own Google stock yesterday? You know, a fair amount of people here have gray hair with me. And let's say I started tonight out saying I have a great investment opportunity and you'll love it because it's really volatile. That's not what we want to hear, but that's where a lot of money is placed. If you don't like that, we'll put it in a 10-year T-bill, and today it's all the way up to about 1.8. So real estate is starting to attract money because it's the best thing maybe to do. How about if you gradually reduce inventory for sale? So this is the chart of unsold inventory gradually. This is all of California, 3.2 months. And this chart happens to be Riverside to May anyway. Maybe it's just disappeared. Maybe we have June, but there's nothing for sale. I'm not sure. We've gone from 6 months to 1 month of inventory for sale. Is that a recipe for a price increase? Introduce into the mix now several billion dollars of buying company that want to hold these properties as rentals. There's a whole slew of those people. One of them is Carrington. We're going to talk to them and what they're doing and how their model is different. But that is added volume that we can't deny in the business. Instead of foreclosing, let's sell the loans in bulk. So FHA started selling bulk note pools. Carrington just won two of those, so we get to talk a little bit about that. So instead of, you remember we used to attend HUD auctions? Not going to happen this time. Sell existing homes in bulk. Fannie Mae just sold a pile of homes in bulk. And, you know, one of the things that the California realtor would probably appreciate is maybe that isn't necessary. We probably have buyers, and we have people that have REO infrastructure that we could easily handle that. But, you know, that's at least what's been going on very recently. Take a deed in lieu of foreclosure and rent back to the people. So once again, a home that would have made it into the MLS for sale isn't getting there. How many of you heard the great news that building is off the mat and is accelerating at almost, what, a 15% or clip? That's really impressive until you see the chart. So what if we had a 50% increase in Riverside? Wow, that would be almost non-existent. When you start from numbers like this, it's not really numerically exciting, to be quite honest with you. No, so are builders excited? How can you tell builders are excited? They would create subdivisions. That would be a stamp of approval. We believe that the market is going to accelerate. There's the subdivision creation chart. So in Riverside, you typically are creating 300-plus subdivisions, and now you're down to a couple dozen. So I don't quite buy that the builder is going to start providing lots of houses for us to see in the marketplace. Solving the debt from top down because of that $25 billion settlement. We've had some change in attitude. A couple of things. I'll just quickly read these. To provide relief more quickly, Chase executives are addressing the borrow fatigue with a letter sent to borrowers notifying them that their loan was refinanced into a new mortgage with a lower interest rate, no documentation needed. All you have to do is open your envelope. Now, it gets harder if you want a principal reduction. Chase is sending different letters to underwater borrowers. All that's required in order for a principal reduction on their loan is a signature sent back with a self-addressed stamped envelope the bank provides. But you do have to do that. I got excited a couple days ago. B of A was wiping out 150,000 credit lines to zero. And it just so happened that when I got home, I had a B of A letter in my mailbox. It was like Christmas. I thought, could it be? And, no. But why? You have to be delinquent. See, that's interesting, isn't it? You had to be delinquent on your first. I think that's part of the criteria. So, yeah, collective, that's not good. So, again, solving the debt from the top down, we're forgiving the debt, we're doing short sales, we're even paying the former owner to do the short sale. There was an example in Moreno Valley where somebody owed, say, $250 on a two-bedroom house. It went for 57 to one of our investors. The owner was given $25,000 to agree to the transaction. After closing costs, the lender netted $23,000. The owner, who was current on the payment, had $25,000. By the way, can that owner go buy another house right away? Yes. Does he have the money? Yeah, we just gave it to him. What a cool deal. Okay. Modify and remodify. Now, this is the piece of the puzzle that when I put this together, I realized that we don't need special tricks, because we have, and then here's the question, our buyers in short supply are everywhere you look. When we were aggressively foreclosing on people in 08 and 09, we weren't really thinking you're all going to emerge 3 years later as able to get an FHA loan. And if that number is sufficient, that can be a wow for a marketplace. It would be if we could get to the chart. There we go. Now, in a two-year period, right at the peak, we foreclosed in Riverside 61,588 homes, and in 2011, we sold 37,000 homes. So that number is consistent because of what I want to show you. So literally, we have 165% of the volume we did in 2011 stacked on top of 2012 as people that used to own that are now paying more rent to live in a house than it would cost them to re-own. Would some of them make a decision to want to own? Yes. Do they all have to? No. But I'll bet you it's not a small percentage. And I think that might be why we're experiencing a lot of offers, is because we didn't really think about this happening. In 2010, we foreclosed on 22,000 people. That's 65% of the annual sales volume for 2011. They're going to show up in 2013 on top of demand that we provide as investors, on top of Wall Street's demand for properties, on top of normal buyer demand. You have big piles of people on top of that. So I'm really sorry, Mr. Schiller. Mathematically, it's virtually impossible when you have 1 month of inventory to have a price decline when you have excessive demand. It doesn't make any sense to me. San Bernardino County is an excessive example. It has 200% people that were foreclosed on in 08 and 09. Every county was aggressive in 08 and 09. You have more buyers coming out of the woodwork than we know what to do with. Percentage of all cash sales up to nearly 30%. So here's a good question. Where's the inventory going to come from? So if we're down to 1 month of inventory locally, we're going to get a glut of REOs? It doesn't seem to be that's the intent. We're going to have private owners with equity sell? Well, in an empire, 40% or so don't have equity. And so they're not likely to emerge in the quantity that's necessary. Short sale, yeah, that's going to be a lot of sales are going to be short sales this year, but those don't happen overnight. How about investor flips? Aren't we having to pay more for the property, and sometimes it makes more sense to hold them as rentals than it does to flip them? That's what's also starting to happen. And people that are buying a trustee sales have a different intent. New construction, you're a long way away from that, providing a lot of inventory. So what used to go back to the banks now gets bought at trustee sales and not resold. So these big companies that are buying rentals at the trustee sales, they're not fixing them and reselling them. They're keeping them as rentals. What used to go to trustee sale now gets sold in bulk or renegotiated via loan modification. What used to go to trustee sale now gets sold via short sale. Instead of foreclosing quickly, the lender continues to be allowed all the time in the world to figure out how to solve it. So I think home prices, evidence of late, have gone up across the board. I think we're just starting, to be quite honest with you. What happens also is a shift in habit of people. When you start having price increases, you start having people with negative equity continue to make their payment. By the way, if they're current in 2012, after what we've just been through, the odds of them not making their payment seems rather unlikely to me. I think they're going to make the payment. Sean O'Toole will go over this with me when I talk to him a little bit later, but this is the California foreclosure funnel. The big number is you have all these people underwater in California, 2 million people, but you only have 434,000 of them delinquent and only 70,000 REOs in the bank, already owned by the bank. And if you talk to some of the REO agents in the crowd, they're not getting tons of assignments, and they really don't anticipate that changing. What also happens as prices accelerate, it adds to the number of move-up buyers. We have somebody that works for the company. They bought a house in February, I believe, $205,000. House is already gone up to $285,000. They refied it without PMI, and the extra money they saved per month, they actually bought a car. That happened inside of the year in Riverside. It adds to the interest of first-time buyers. See, she tells that story, right? So she has renter friends, and they go, wow, I didn't get an 80 grand increase in nothing. Maybe I should own something. So eventually prices go up to the point of profitable construction. Now people that own dirt are going, wow, this pencils. I think we'll build something. And when you start construction, you see, we've manufactured a comeback in reverse. We will solve the jobs by creating construction. And part of it is because we have all this inventory that we're not bringing to market. We shoved it on the sidelines and pretended it doesn't exist for a while. And it happened to coincide with foreclosing on a bunch of people years before that have reemerged on top of normal demand. And so those two things coming together could make for a pretty nice volatile market, especially when you have a 3%, 3.5% mortgage rate that doesn't give you too big of a monthly payment jump for a big price increase. You start solving this list, which is basically construction. This is unemployment. Financial activities and manufacturing, you've solved California's unemployment problem, and you do that, you fix migration. You fix migration, you fixed our tax base. I think this is all about to play out. The only thing, of course, we're going to talk about tonight is the policies that are in place better stay there, you know, because this is artificially being supported by lots of things. But it kind of makes sense that if you don't want to write off $4 trillion of debt, maybe you could push prices back up where they were, at least for enough time for people to get to refi or sell and get that mortgage at 3% or so. And then the monthly payment makes a whole lot more sense. That's what I see just about to happen. And when that happens to a county like Riverside, this is what happens to the migration in our area. And all of a sudden, all these things that we have to put up with right now get to change very quickly. So, Mr. Schiller, I disagree. I would be shocked if we had any problem. We're going to do it in different segments this time because the people have similarities in their experience. So we're going to bring up two economists first, and we'll talk about the economy and some of the things that are going on. Mark Palem. He's the Director of Economics for Fannie Mae and Strategic Research Group at Fannie Mae. His work focuses on the impact of trends in the financial service sector and the economy in Fannie Mae. Thank you. And also, Eric Jensen is here again. He's an economic and financial market analyst. Author, speaker with more than 28 years of executive experience in high technology startup companies, venture capital, finance, and economics, founder and president of iTulip Inc., and author of The Post-Catastrophe Economy. Eric. Okay. By the way, it's exciting to be the moderator of this because I'm really questioning people that are much brighter than I am, just so you know. And what that does is it puts a challenge because I do a lot of reading because I try to be ready. But it's fun. Just overhearing the conversations at the table was fun to hear. And we're about to direct some of that your way. So that's a lot of fun. Mark, I think I'll start with you. There's a quarterly credit supplement that you guys put out, and just a couple of the categories. How's the sentiment, let's say, in the prices? What are people feeling about the way prices are headed?
Sure. First of all, I wanted to thank you for including me on the panel, and I do have to say for the lawyers back at the office that my views are just my views. That keeps it simple. I didn't bring my wife because she would say, and I don't even agree with him.
Well, I appreciate that. Means I can ask you some more questions. That's good.
That's right.
So these reports that reveal sentiment, and so one of them being prices, what has that been changing in a positive
sure,
way?
Sure, yeah, that's a very interesting question. You know, as economists, one of the things we'll always puzzle over and have since at least the Great Depression is how do you get a handle on expectations? How do you get... We know that expectations have a huge impact on markets, right? People make decisions under uncertainty. You do it all the time when you invest and you buy a property or if you're lending. So one of the things we've done is we've started doing consumer surveys again in the last few years. And what we've seen since about November of last year is a real improvement in people's expectations about house prices. And so one of the things we ask people is how much do they expect rents will go up? What do they expect home prices will go up? And we've seen that the part that I think is very encouraging is not only that we've seen this trend month after month, but the amount by which people think prices are going to go up is actually reasonable in terms of it's not a bubble mentality. They're telling us that they think on average it'll be 1.5%. You know, another month it might be 1.25%, it might be 1%. Those are, to me, expectations that create, you know, solid demand.
Yes. And yet, it's enough to encourage them to participate?
Well, I think one of the things that's helping drive, you know, increased demand from first-time buyers in particular is how much rents are going up.
Yeah.
And you see it in the data, and you also see it in the expectations. In the same survey, people are telling us they think rents are going to go up about 3.5%. And as I think you alluded to and showed for California, it's true in many markets, it's actually cheaper now to own than to rent.
Does being delinquent change their feeling of what's next for the future?
You know, that is another thing we look at. And delinquent borrowers have remained significantly positive. They're not quite as positive as other lenders, but they're nothing like as... different in their consumer attitudes about housing, in terms of their desire to want to continue to have home ownership, in terms of their view that housing is a good investment. So that's one thing. If you were coming at it, you know, with just a pure economics background, you'd think, well, they've really been burnt hard; they wouldn't be interested. But they remain very interested in home ownership.
Okay, as an economist, do you feel that we've passed the bottom of the housing market and now we're on an upswing that's sustainable?
Well, we haven't called the bottom. What I do think with what we're seeing in the data, and we're seeing it pretty broadly across the country, is the return of a seasonal pattern where we had a really good spring in terms of not only house prices but also days on market. Many markets are returning back to a very healthy situation in terms of supply and demand. The reason I'm a little hesitant to say that, you know, we're definitely past the bottom goes with the fact that, you know, prices are currently being supported by incredibly low interest rates and the federal government having a huge involvement in supporting credit.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate. Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, For Investors by Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, John Reisinger Photography, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza, and Winning in Tough Times LLC. See isurvivedrealestate.com for the video from the live event.